mom surviving life. Tough questions, real answers, awesome hacks.
Hello and welcome to Mom Surviving Life. Today, Carla and I are going to talk with our friend Lauren about disabilities. We would also like to put a disclaimer that anything made in this episode cannot be taken as a medical diagnosis. Lauren is not a doctor and she cannot diagnose your children in a 1 and a bit hour podcast episode. Okay, Lauren, let's talk disabilities.
All right. You want me to introduce myself?
Yes.
Yeah, like we can probably start
yourself
there.
First.
Yeah. What do you want me to say?
Whatever you want.
Your name, what's your age, what do you do for school, what do you do now?
Just my whole life?
Yeah.
Let me think of it in the right order. I'm so bad at introducing myself. So, okay. So my name is Lauren. I'm 31, and I am the founder and executive director of a respite service for adults with disabilities.
And what did you go to school for?
I went to Fanshawe College. And I took the Social Services program.
Okay. What does a DSW do?
So a DSW, in the most simple explanation ever, is we basically just support people with disabilities. So developmental services worker is what it stands for. So developmental services, people with disabilities. We are complete, like in the DSW program specifically, we are completely educated only on people with disabilities and really nothing else. So it varies. We learn all kinds of different things. Like we learn how to support people with challenging complex behaviors. We learn how to support people who have really mild disabilities, learning disabilities. And we learn how to support people who have more physical disabilities. They're a lot more dependent. They have wheelchairs, lifts. We are also trained in medication administration. So we're allowed to give medicine. We're like a nurse, but not really. Like we can't do big things. Like we can't be putting catheters in people and things like that, but we can irrigate a catheter. We know how to put in like certain types of G-tubes if they come out. We can't like obviously insert a G-tube into somebody's body. That's never had one, but if they come out and they already had a G-tube, we know how to put it back in. Suppositories, things like that. We are also trained and giving heavy duty meds like Dilaudid and things like that as well.
So just so our listeners are aware, when Lauren is referring to a G-tube, she's referring to a gastric tube that is inserted in the nose or the mouth to help with feeding.
Ours is usually stomach.
Oh, or the, oh, you like button babies?
Yeah, they're usually in the stomach. So they go right in their belly. Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. We can't do a GJ tube. Those ones are like, they go right in stomach. And I think, I don't know how to say the word. It starts with a J. That's what the J is for. And that's where all the food goes. What is it called? It's like a jejunum. I don't know how to say it. But
we'll look it up and put it.
Yeah. Those ones, you need like an X-ray and a doctor to put those in. Those are intense.
How does a DSW differ from a PSW?
Basically, the main difference is that a PSW is a personal support worker. So they are typically educated mostly on how to support the elderly. And they're not, I've never been in the program, so don't quote me on what I'm about to say. But I know that they're mostly educated on taking care of the elderly group and not specifically people with disabilities. So technically speaking, if you wanted somebody to take care of your child with a disability, a DSW is more who you want, but a PSW isn't unable to do it. They can probably do just as good of a job. And one of the main differences I think in our programs is that they're not, again, I still think this is the way it is in their program, but back in the day, this was for sure it. They were not trained in medication administration and we are. So, I mean, again, they can give it if they want, like if they're allowed, but those are the main differences. We basically do essentially, like our goal at the end of the day is the same, to take care of a person and make sure they live a really good life.
I like that.
How did you choose the DSW program, like when you were going to school?
So I chose it mainly because I have an aunt who has cerebral palsy. And I've always just been like fascinated by her for my whole life. And I didn't really understand, like at the time, I thought, oh, taking care of people. I remember like she would have her support workers at like our family events and stuff to help her. And I was like, that's cool. Like you can help somebody. That's neat. That's literally what I thought I was going to be doing. Just helping somebody. I didn't look into it at all on like the other parts of what a DSW would do. So I applied to the program at a couple different schools and I picked Fanshawe. And as I was in the courses, I was like, oh my God, I have to clean somebody's poop. I was like, that's so gross. I don't think I'm going to be able to do that. And then they started to get really intense on us with the medication administration. They're like, you got to make sure that you get it all right. You have to make sure it's the right person, the right dose, the right time. And if you don't, you'll go to jail. You'll get in trouble. You'll die. Or they'll die. You might die, I guess. And like, oh my God. I was like, I got to clean poo. I'm going to kill somebody. I was like, this isn't for me. Like, I was really scared. Like I was actually thinking about dropping out of the program because I was like, oh my God, I was like, I don't know if I can do this. So I actually ended up getting like a summer job in between my two years. And that's another PSW difference. They have 1 year of schooling and we have two. I got a job doing like a summer student program. And I was just a summer student for a summer program where basically it was a group of like four people who went out in the community all the time. It's kind of neat because that's what I do now, but I actually loved it. And so and I loved the people, it was a girl group. I loved the girls that were in the group and I loved the staff. And then in the mornings, I got to go to a day program before the program started. And I loved interacting with like all the people in the day program. And I was like, oh my God, this is for me. I love these people. They are the best. Like I'm happy. So I ended up continuing on with the course, obviously, and I graduated. And now it's kind of funny because I excel and I prefer to work with people who are a little bit more dependent and who actually do need help with, you know, changing their, you know, bowel movements and things like that. I like, that's what I'm good at, which is funny because I really thought I wasn't going to be good at that. High medication. You ask me to give medicine, I can do it in any way. It's very easy. So for me, people like supporting people in a wheelchair is very easy for me. Like lifts, slings, all that kind of stuff is super easy for me to do. And I actually find that like for kids or people that have like higher complex challenging behaviors, that's where I don't excel. Like my best is absolutely not good enough for them. Like it's just not. But some people excel in that and they don't really excel in what I would excel in.
Can you help us learn what to look for in kids?
Yes, I can. Okay, so this is kind of like, again, this is just more of my knowledge on what I've learned in the past 10, 11 years and what parents have said. Interesting. It's general stuff. A lot of it you could probably find on Google and don't like, you know, take what I say and diagnose your child. There's basically the first thing with parents is you guys will, like moms especially, you guys will know something's wrong. Something's not quite right. And you'll know, you got a mom's intuition. So you'll just know to start calling doctors, asking questions. And a lot of times the problem is that you might already have experienced it. Doctors will kind of shrug you off and say, it's nothing, don't worry about it. And it's definitely something. And don't ever like think, oh, the doctor says nothing and it's nothing, because it's probably something and you just need to advocate. That's really all it is. But there's some things, like, of course, like there's certain things you can notice. And like, I mean, there's so many different disabilities. Like, I mean, a learning disability, you have ADHD and you have autism, you have dyslexia. So, I mean, there's common symptoms like in ADHD. If you start noticing, like, you know, I have it all written out here so I can remember what to say, so don't forget. Like if you could tell that they're really not listening to you, they're all over the place. They can't sit still. They talk excessively. They interrupt you all the time. Like those are really common characteristics of somebody who might have ADHD. You send them on a task and on their way to the task that they're supposed to be doing, they stop and they're completely distracted by something else. Those are pretty common. Autism, I mean, the spectrum's huge. That could be a whole show on its own for you guys. But like, I mean, some of the main things you might notice is like poor eye contact, excessive need for quiet, and very orderly. They like everything in a specific order. And if it's not in that order, that causes them a lot of stress. They have a lack of like responding to you and others, and they don't really care if you're talking to them at all. There's like that list could go on and on and on because the spectrum is so big and there's just so many different, you know, variations of autism. And that can be diagnosed, I think, at any point in life. I know adults could be diagnosed with it like way later in life. I think too, that is because for a long time, autism didn't really exist, right? So it wasn't diagnosed in a lot of people. Like dyslexia, I mean, that's again, that's more of like a like language learning. So like you would notice like they have a hard time spelling. The main one that everybody knows with dyslexia is they get like certain words or letters mixed up or backwards. You'll notice like their reading skills are a little bit like they're lacking a little bit. They're a little slower at learning how to read and they're not really reaching like the stage of reading they should be at. What else? So there's also, so that's like, those are the main learning disabilities that you can see. Then there's the intellectual disabilities. So a developmental disability is kind of like the umbrella of all disabilities. So everything falls under a developmental disability. So you'll see intellectual disabilities, learning disabilities, physical disabilities, all under the developmental umbrella. An intellectual disability is more like, you'll see like a lack of intellectual and adaptive functioning. And you'll see it in like their, in their childhood, mostly. There's three different levels. There's mild, moderate, and profound. Four different levels, I think. No, three. Mild, moderate. Oh, severe and profound. I wrote these out for you guys because I don't remember these off by heart.
We don't expect you to.
Okay. So I just never remember the mild, moderate, and like what they all are. So a mild and moderate one, you'll notice things like they're slower to process information. They have difficulties learning like daily living skills, but like they can still function in their day with very minimal support. You just notice there's almost a delay in everything. Severe, they have very limited communication skills. That's another one. And I think it'll be like more severe characteristics I just labeled off for mild and moderate. So it'd be harder for them to do life skills and things like that. And they might need a little bit more help from that. And then profound is they just basically need help with everything the most part. That's just like the most simple way I can put it. Then you have physical disabilities. I mean, those are pretty easy to see. You see most of them. A lot of them are hereditary or they are acquired if something happens, like an accident or infection or something like that. And then a lot of them happen at birth. So you won't know. And then there's also obviously the ones you can find out will have them before you have your baby. So Down syndrome is one of them. So there's, those ones are pretty easy because you kind of know already, but a lot of times you'll see within the first couple years, you'll start to see things that like their delays. So then that's when you'll start to question what's happening here.
So sorry, I want to cut you off. Are you?
Yeah, I'm done.
Okay, I wasn't sure.
The longest, it's so long. And like, I could literally go on for hours about it. Like, it just never ends, the answers.
Yeah.
That was me summing it up.
It was a very thorough list. I wonder if the ages and stages questionnaire that we've talked about before would be a really good, helpful indicator to talk to your GP if you're concerned. So the ages and stages questionnaire is broken down into, I believe, 7 or 8 different categories of like fine motor skills, gross motor skills, verbal, cognitive functioning, developmental, and there's a few others that I'm escaping right now because it's varied based on ages. Yeah. But basically it like goes through certain things that like your child should be doing at that age. And like,
yeah,
ages and stages questionnaire is a guideline. And it's not a hard and fast if your kid is not, you know, throwing a ball by 2 that they're developmentally delayed. Like, that's not what we're saying.
Yeah.
But I feel like if you're concerned, that would be a really good place to start. And then, but what would you do if you are concerned? Like, where do you go for an assessment? Do you go to your GP or is there a specialist?
If you're concerned too, a lot of times this happens with moms, like they're concerned and there is an actual issue to be concerned about, but a lot of the time, I guess, it can be fixed. They might be delayed in talking, but maybe it's just they're delayed in talking and, you know, you take them to a speech therapist or something along those lines and then they don't stop talking. And I mean, you know, that happens all the time. For a diagnosis, Basically, this is hard because in my mind, there's no set answer for this because the first person you're always going to call is your family doctor or your pediatrician. And then they're the ones that are going to probably fluff you up and tell you nothing's wrong. And then you're going to come back a couple times and say, no, there's something wrong. This is when they're going to probably send you off to other doctors. And basically, any medical doctor can diagnose a disability. That can be an osteopath, a psychologist, a psychotherapist, a psychiatrist, any medical doctor. If it's in their like realm of expertise, they can diagnose. So, I mean, that's more of just like a journey of a parent. There's no real like exact, this is what you do and this is how you get it done. It's basically you advocating and getting where you need to go without knowing where the heck you need to go. So it's an individual journey on for every single parent that is concerned and has an issue, like thinks there's an issue. So it depends on where they go and who helps them. I mean, other things too is, I was just saying it to you, like mom groups are great because there's always a mom that has experienced something that you're experiencing. And then they can kind of be like, hey, I know what you're talking about. I went here. I did this. I talked to this person. I talked to 4 different doctors. This one did this and this one did this and take them here. So, I mean, mom groups are great.
Literally why this podcast exists.
Yeah.
It's silly, but like, it's true. Like, there's always somebody around that has experienced something that you've experienced. And it's always nice too, when you're the one that experienced it and you can help another mom.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You have a good spot to go for resources to like learn about these things or to gain more information on what to look for.
Basically Google's the best. Google's always good, but remember Google also tells you you have cancer for everything. So
yeah.
Take it with a grain of salt. Don't diagnose your kid from Google. But if you do, the other thing you can do too is, I don't know if everybody has access to the DSM, but that's the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual for Mental Disorders. So I don't know if everybody has access to that or if you can Google it, but that will, that's something that basically gives you information about characteristics of different disabilities. You can look up anything on there if you have access to it. Like I've always had access to it, but maybe it's because I'm in the field, but I feel like it should be something that everybody probably has access to. I don't really know. These are things I do not know. Because some things I have access to, I don't really realize that no one else might not have access to it. I just think everybody has what I have.
We do want to preface that anything that you read in that journal is not a medical diagnosis, and please don't diagnose yourself with anything out of that journal that needs to come from a medical doctor.
Yes. Do not diagnose unless a doctor does it for you. But it's good to get that kind of stuff for reference for the doctor and say, hey, these are the when you advocate, that's the other thing. So when a doctor's fluffing you off and you need to advocate, you're going to say, hey, this is what this article said, or this is what the DSM said. It said, these are the characteristics of this, and these are the characteristics that my child is showing. So why are we not looking into this? Where's the tests? What, like, again, I can like doing going through every single type of test there is for every disability. I mean, that's a whole other episode for you guys, but I mean, there's certain things too. Learning disabilities are big. Like if you Google, you'll find everything about a learning disability. It's really easy. And it's all very common characteristics in a learning disability. And I mean, there's common characteristics in almost every disability, but there is a lot of differences as well. It's a lot. And, you know, your kids will have, you know, something out of the norm that you don't really see often in that disability, but it is a symptom or a sign. Not really a symptom, you know, symptoms, like a sign or characteristic, but it's not a common one. And then there's also the issue of like really rare disabilities. I have a gentleman in my group and he has a disability and you can see it and you know he has one, but he was not diagnosed with an actual diagnosis, like a name for what he had, until I think he was 23 years old. And he is now 27. So yeah. And it is a very rare disease, like not disease, it's a very rare disability that not a lot of people have, and there's not a lot of information about it. And again, it's interesting because he was diagnosed with it. It did help his mom understand it a little more. He's quite an anomaly, honestly. He's such an interesting human being. But there's one other person she knows of who has a son who's younger, who has the same disability and diagnosis, and he lives like an hour away. And so obviously as moms, they connect and talk and, you know, but like, imagine going 23 years and not having a single person to talk to about what is going on with your kid. That must have been so hard. And he's very, very interesting. And he's not verbal. So imagine, you have no idea. He's the best, but it's crazy that like, it took 23 years to get a diagnosis. So that's a journey. That's a big journey to get those answers. Like, she didn't stop for 23 years. So she got an answer. So
dedication,
right? You want to know, and you want to make sure that, like, and that's the scary thing. You don't know if you don't get a diagnosis and you're not treating the disability accordingly, like that can be detrimental at the end of the day. Scary.
It's a hard life to live without answers. That's for sure.
But moms are bad. You guys figure everything out. Like,
just don't stop
until you get an answer.
That was like me with Kinsley and Reagan. Like, they were in speech therapy, and just because they were in speech therapy, like, it wasn't the end of like they're not going to be verbal. And they were in speech therapy because Reagan wouldn't talk and Kinsley was mispronouncing everything, and I was like, is this okay? And they're like, you need to separate them. So at daycare, they're in separate groups now. Reagan talks and they both can like say their F's and their SH's, and they can say like car, but they can also say like Caesar salad. Like, they can say all those words, and it's like they know how to say all their pronunciation of letters. And like, that's, we got discharged. Cool. The speech therapist is like, you don't need to be here. Bye.
You don't need to be here anymore. See you later. My friend thought her son was autistic. He was just showing a lot of signs of it. He's not, but she ended up taking him to like three different therapists to figure out that basically nothing was wrong. And he was just a little delayed, and now he's fine. So, and he's like, he's so intelligent. He's so smart. Like, he can tell time and he can do like simple math equations, and he's four. He can spell, like, yeah. She was just worried because he wasn't talking and he won't go to the bathroom. He won't use the toilet. He thinks it's going to eat him.
Oh,
so funny.
All right. What kind of programs and therapies are out there to help post-diagnosis?
That's a really big question. And a lot of those, I don't really know. So it's kind of, I mean, there's so many therapy-wise, there's just so many different things for every disability. Like, and you don't really know it until you need it. It's one of those. So, and I don't really have to, I've never had to actually find out about them. But it's like, once you're diagnosed, once they're diagnosed, then, you know, you'll start to find resources that you need for stuff. It kind of just depends on the diagnosis. Everything's different and they all need different things. So, you know, you could put them in speech therapy if, you know, they don't pronunciate properly. Most of them can go to school. There's also like, what are they? Kind of like an extracurricular thing. Like, you can take them. Oh my gosh, I forget what it's called, but here it's called Spectra and Wetra, where they do the horseback riding, which is therapy. Oh,
equine therapy.
Yeah. It's like here, they got Spectra and Wetra, and Wetra is like Windsor Essex something riding association. What's the therapy? I don't remember. And then Spectra's the same. It's like, I don't know what the SP stands for, to be honest with you. It's more in the county. But yeah, there's those kind of things. There's pet therapy, any kind of therapy they might need. Honestly, there's doctors for everything. And then there's tons of resources for people with autism. I don't really support anybody with autism, so I don't really know a lot of resources for them. And there's just a lot. I mean, those are easy to find if you need resources like that.
And when Lauren says she doesn't support someone with autism, she means she doesn't work with them. Not that she doesn't support
them. Not that I, yeah. Yeah. Not that I wouldn't support them. I just don't happen. I just don't happen to have anybody that I support who has autism. That did sound really bad.
Like, wait, let me clarify.
So just to be clear, I support people with autism, just not current, okay? And I don't know their resources, all right? That's one of the things, especially because I'm not a parent. So it's never been something I've had to really look into. Even when I was in like an agency, a lot of them don't really have specific, like they're all older. I've only really ever supported people who are adults. So any of those kind of therapies they probably had when they were younger, if there was any. A lot of the people I support too, not now, but when I was in an agency, they're older and a lot of them were in institutions. So if you know anything, I'm not going to say a lot about institutions, but if you know about institutions, it wasn't the best place for them to be. So
I feel like a lot of what goes on in therapies and stuff is like ensuring that they're interacting with others, and basically everything that the pandemic has taken away is like,
yeah, pretty much
what they get out of therapies. Yeah. And again,
it's all unique to their disability and what they need. So I'm trying to think of any therapies that like any of my group is in, but I can't really.
Well, I'm thinking like the Fun with Friends Bowling League when that's in Windsor. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, I think it was, right? Fun with Friends.
Fun with Friends.
Fun with Friends. And again, that's more socialization than it would be therapy. I'm thinking of like big therapy. There's, a lot of them do speech therapy because like if they don't talk clearly, it's always nice to be able to understand them better.
With someone who's nonverbal, do speech therapy?
I don't think so. I think that maybe would be more, again, I don't know because I don't have any, but like I have, it's for people who are nonverbal, but I've never had to put them into any kind of therapy. So I don't really know what any family typically would do, but like, I think after a certain point, maybe not speech therapy, but maybe they would teach them like sign language or just other alternative ways to communicate. I've supported so many people who don't talk, and you know what they want and when they want it and how they want it. And you just know, you learn how to communicate with them the way that they have chosen to communicate with you. And a lot of them understand what you're saying. So you just gotta, you basically, like us, we need to adapt to their needs. It's like we can't expect us to, or we expect them to meet our standards of what we think they need and what they should do, when really we need to go and rethink about it and meet their standards and what they actually need. And they'll be way more successful if we all did that.
Well, and even like babies are nonverbal for like the first 2 years of their life. And you know exactly when they're hungry and when they're wet and everything else.
Yeah. And like you expect, like in a certain way, you expect your baby to do certain things because you were told your baby is supposed to do certain things. And when they don't do those things, that's when you have to start kind of adapting and figuring out alternative ways for them to achieve the things that you expected them to do. I catch myself doing it at work all the time where I think I set an expectation for somebody and they don't meet it. And then I'm kind of frustrated. I'm like, why didn't that work? And then I always have to take a step back and be like, okay, I need to regroup and I need to figure out how to change what I'm thinking and meet them where they are and let them be successful in the way that they need to be successful, which may not have been where my expectations were. And it's not, it doesn't even mean like you lower the expectations, you're just changing the expectation.
Yeah. Is there government assistance for some of these programs?
Yes. Again, I don't know a lot about the kids because I don't really support, I've never really had to support children because a lot of times they're in school. So, I mean, and this is common. Most of them go to school. Pretty much everybody goes to school. I mean, again, I don't really know much about what happens if they don't go to school or if families choose not to put them in school. Is that even allowed? I don't know.
I don't know.
Like, can you choose not to put your kid in school? I have no idea. But, so a lot of them are in school. So basically I know of programs when they're 18, or if they choose to graduate high school at 21, there's a lot. So, I mean, you can graduate at 21, you can go to the life skills program. I'm sure lots of colleges have it, but St. Clair College has it in Windsor. They have a life skills program. And I'm pretty positive that if you graduate what you're supposed to at 18, you can go to the life skills program for free. I'm pretty sure, unless they change that, that might be old information. but they can do the life skills program, which is really great. They can, what else can we do for after school? Okay, there's day programs. So day programs, I think, are an up and coming thing. So I think what happened was, so back in the day, there was the institutions, and that's where they went. Basically, they just went to an institution and that was it. Now institutions are closed. So now we're doing the community integration with everybody. So that started off with agencies that had 24-hour living. So they didn't really need programs because they had 24-hour living. I think there was a few programs here and there that they could do, like little jobs. They used to have little jobs.
Like wiping the tables down?
No, like I don't even know how to explain what it was, like, because they did it in a day program. So there was like a little day program, and they would be paid, I'm pretty sure, to do a job for a company. And it was like, I remember it was just little tasks that they had to do. And they did that for a really long time. It's like contract work almost, or something like that.
I know when I was in high school, there was someone who physically you could tell that they had a disability, and they were just collecting trays in the food court.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Like there's like all kinds of things they can do like that. And then, the 24-hour living came into play, and a lot of them moved into 24-hour homes. So there really wasn't a need for much else, but that grew, obviously. That's huge now. And it's so big that there's just not enough housing out there for them at this point. Like off topic, but sort of on the same topic, is like, this is where the day program starts to come in. So 24-hour homes grew, or the need for a 24-hour home grew, and the wait list for these people, I think specifically in Ontario, I don't really know anywhere else in the world, that wait list can be like 15 plus years for these guys. Oh, it's very long. Yeah. And it's not even in it's not even in order. So like if say someone in my group was next on the list, they just happened to be next on this list, and an opening came up in a house. If that home, say, was made for complex, challenging behaviors, the gentleman that's next in my group wouldn't go there because he can't be living with somebody that could potentially cause harm to him. So it's not going to fit. And what kind of quality of life is that if you're living in a home where you're scared all the time that someone's going to maybe hurt you? So they skip him down the list to find somebody that kind of fits the same needs as the rest of the people in the house. So they can skip down 7, 8, 9, 20 people. So they take that person off the list, they go in the house, and now they gotta wait for another opening. And another opening could come in 1 year, 6 months, 2 years, 10 years. You don't know. And there's little mini lists that come before that list. So within agencies, they have an emergency list. So if there's a family that has a huge emergency or somebody really needs to get into a house, they will go first. I've seen that happen where there was a lady, and she's a little older, and her dad passed away. She had nowhere to live. So she's obviously on the emergency list. She gets in the house faster. And then once they exhaust all of the people on the emergency list, they go through this thing called a cross area planning list, where they kind of shift people within the agencies around to where they need to go. Somebody might live in Toronto, but they need to live in Windsor. So they kind of shift like that. And then once that's done, then they go to the other list.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So this is why day programs became kind of a popular situation, because there was nothing filling this gap between high school and a 24-hour home anymore. Every parent's just left going, well, now what? They don't go to school. I got to go to work. And what are they going to do? Sit at home all day and do nothing, if they even can be left alone? Or, you know, like where do they go? And like, again, they're not children. They can't go to a babysitter, and they're grown adults. Then they deserve a good quality of life. Right. So what do you do? this is where I've noticed too that day programs are popping up more like every day. Ever since I started mine, there used to only be a couple around this area, and now there's just more every day. And honestly, you really just can't have enough because we all answer to different needs. So, I mean, day programs are really interesting, but the problem is that we're not that well known right now. So like a family can search for us and they might only find two of us when there's actually seven of us, and the two that they find might not be good fits, if that makes sense. So there's, I think in another question you might ask me is like, how do you look for the resources in there? But that's pretty easy. You can find a lot of us like through the ministry. So the main ministry that you would find this information is the Ministry of Children, Community and Social Services, which they have a website. And that is another resource for families looking for any kind of information about anything for a child or adult with disabilities. Development of Service Ontario is another great one. I don't know if they do it with everybody, but they came to Lola's and checked us out before just to see what we were all about. And if they have a family that comes in and is looking for something, they'll show them different programs that they know of, tell families about it. In Windsor specifically, I don't really know anywhere else. There's the Windsor Family Network, which is really great. They really support the whole family through a process. They help with finding they have like facilitators, and they really help the family find like a circle of support if they need it. There's also the Windsor Essex Brokerage. They're kind of the same thing. They just find you the support you need. They do assessments and things to see what your family needs and suggest different things. Again, there's always a mom group. They're great. There's also groups on Facebook where you can actually search like for Windsor, it'd be like Windsor Essex respite group or something, and then all the respites are in there. And then another really good source is community living. Honestly, they like, you might not send them there, but community living has a lot of other resources that they could provide to families. And they also have, I know community living Essex, so I don't know if it's all of them, but I know community living Essex has like parent groups and stuff and advocacy groups. And I'm sure other community livings have that too. It's just a sense of belonging for families, because it's not really just the person that needs a support. It's the whole family. So those are really good resources, but those are more specific to Windsor. The DSO, Developmental Service Ontario, is a huge one. That also will help. They will help families find the passport funding. So they're the main contact families want to get in touch with to get passport funding. And you want to get in contact with them when they're 16. You can get your assessment done in time because you want that money by 18. And it can take a very, very, very long time to be assessed and get money. So 16 is the magic number to get assessment by the DSO. You can easily Google that. And there's like little mini DSO pods all over the area. So there's one in Windsor. And, you know, there's one in London, and they're all over the place. And again, the same thing with like the ministry. I mean, the ministry is the whole province, I'm pretty sure.
Can you tell us the difference between a day program and a 24-hour program other than the time itself?
The 24-hour homes are pretty cool because they live there the whole time. I think I would say the difference is that in a 24-hour home, and this is just basically based on my opinion of what I've seen in a 24-hour home based on me running a day program. So in a 24-hour home, they're very routine and they kind of do the same thing every day. They get up, they get ready, and then they have to share their week with other people. So a lot of times what they do is there's typically 3 to 4 people in a home, and there's like, you know, depending on the supports needed, there's 1 to 2 staff. So they get their special day or two where they get to go out, and that's their day. So say their day is Tuesday. So they get to do their special activity on Tuesday, and they can choose the activity, or they might have like an ongoing activity. So it could be music therapy or something. That's another therapy, music therapy. That's really good. So, or it could be like the retrospective horseback riding, or they might just like to go out and shop for a puzzle or something like that. They all have their own special days that they get to do stuff. And then sometimes they'll go out together and do things. I mean, now they don't really do a lot like that because of COVID, but it kind of depends on the stuff. It kind of depends on the house, who lives there, how they interact with each other. Typically, they interact pretty well. That's why they live together. But then you also got to remember, like, they're an individual person, and the people they live with are not always going to be their friends. Like, if you think about it in the real world, when you live with a roommate, you might not have been friends with that roommate. You might just live with them. So what, you spend every day hanging out with them, going out to the grocery store and the mall? Like, you're not going to do that. So you try to give them the individuality of doing stuff on their own. But I find, like, I wouldn't say they're limited, but for lack of a better word, they're limited more than a day program. And in a day program, these people are coming into a program and they're learning how to socialize, and they're making friends, and they're going on adventures and activities. And a lot of times they're doing it together. I feel like they might just do more activity wise, just because of the way a day program works is completely different than a 24-hour home. And I mean, when there's more staff in a day program, you kind of split everybody off. So somebody decides, well, I don't want to do this activity, I want to do this one. Then they go do that one somewhere else with maybe a couple other people. And then a couple other people go and do their own thing. I mean, I do it by myself. So everybody in my group just does everything together. And that's not because I make them. It's because I'm just very lucky and they love to do everything together. So if there is somebody that doesn't want to do it, I'd probably take them anyways, but then find a different to do with them at whatever activity we're doing to make them feel like they're also included in it, but not doing the thing they didn't want to do. This never happened, so I don't really have an example. I'm trying to think if there's any other, like, they are very different, but at the same time, the goals are relatively the same. Like, I think too, in a 24-hour home, there's a lot more rules and things to follow. Like, and there's, I don't know, there's just, comparatively speaking to mine, I guess, like I don't really have to do, I can't even think about it. So, like, I don't have to do personal outcomes plans where there's a goal set in place. Like, you set up like three different things, like, oh, they're going to see, you know, two concerts this year. They're going to visit all the parks this year. Like, these life goals they have, like, I don't have to do that, you know, because they're achieving every goal they want by doing every activity they can do. So it's a little different in that sense. But yeah, the goal at the end of the day is to make sure that they live the best quality of life possible. So that's, I guess, similar. But yeah, the main difference is basically that they live in this house and they don't with the people at the day program. I can literally talk about day program.
So can you tell us how we can be helpful to a person with disabilities and not hinder them if we encounter a person with disabilities in public or privately, if we encounter them?
Yeah, I think the main thing is basically just kind of take cues and listen to either the parent or the person that's with them. So their support worker, staff, whatever. I've seen it multiple times where you come up to somebody who has a disability and in the goodness of your heart, you're thinking you're being really kind to them and you're giving them something or talking to them. And just talking sometimes is really rough because they're not babies. And I've seen it so many times where people talk to them like they're babies. And that drives me up the wall. They're grown adults. Do you go up to other grown adults and speak to them like they're children? No. I mean, maybe, but that's fine. No, like, you're not going up to your boss being like, hey, how are you? How was your weekend? Like, you don't do that to your boss. Like, come on. And even little kids. I mean, I know we talk to babies like that, but do we really talk to like that many kids? Like, I don't know. I talk to kids like a normal person, like talk to a person that can talk back. Even if they can't, don't speak to them like they're children. This can hinder them very much because they're very good at, I don't know, like soaking up that, I don't even know how to say it. They're good at soaking up that kind of attention and running with it. So they don't really care in a sense that you're treating them like a baby because they're getting attention from you. And it's for them, it's positive attention. And basically they think they can get you to do whatever they want you to do. And they will hustle you. They will wrap you around their finger. And the second they get an in, they'll do it. And you're kind of stuck that way after a while. And this can set them back because you don't know like what to do, what not to do with them. You can start doing something for them that they don't need you to do it for them. And now you're just setting them back from a skill they used to have, and now they're relying on somebody else to do it. And that all started from just talking to them in like a baby way. It's that simple. I mean, you could also, you don't know what they're working on too when you see them. You don't know what kind of things they're working on. They can be working on so many things. They can be on a diet. And I've had this happen where people will offer them food. And I've had to say no. I'm like, no, they can't. Those people will think that I'm an absolute jerk for saying no. But realistically, it's either that person is maybe allergic, they shouldn't have it because of their diet. And this could cause a lot of issues. They could get mad. And sometimes like it could be mad for the rest of the day. It could become challenging. They could be violent. They could throw a fit. Like it, they're like, now you've set them back like 10 steps, all because you offered them something that you shouldn't have offered them. Because you were trying to be nice. It's out of the goodness of your heart. You wanted to offer them something because you think it's nice. But you just got to take the cues from, especially parents and workers. Like, we know them the best. We know what they can and can't do. We know how they're going to react to things. And sometimes they're working. Sometimes they're working on their socialization. Sometimes they're working on, and like anything. Like, we're always working on something. If you see a person with a disability out and about with a parent or a worker, they're always working on something. So
could you ask the parent or the worker before going up to the person to like offer help or offering, or like you just gotta kind of take cues from what's going on?
Like, I mean, sometimes you can take cues, read the room. Perfect. So if somebody's having an absolute like complex behavioral meltdown in a store, there's really nothing you can do.
Right.
I mean, if you see that this person is like, you know, beating up their support worker and the support worker just can't do anything about it, you might have to call the police. I mean, that's a thing. It happens. It doesn't happen a lot, but it can happen. That's where you would probably step in and help. Now, if the worker is directly in like talking this person and trying to calm them down or whatever it may be, it might be best to step back because another person coming in might cause stress. It might cause a distraction where now they're not paying attention to the worker anymore and you might become a target. Like it's tough because you might not know how to gauge it. But even if you want to offer something, I would definitely, and here's the other thing, they'll always say yes. So you could offer them like a hot dog and they'll be like, yeah, absolutely. Meanwhile, they're a choking hazard and not the person, the hot dog is a choking hazard and they can't eat those. So if you ask like the worker, say, oh, like, is this person able to eat this? Can I offer? A lot of times I've had people where they whisper it to me, which is always really good. I find it good because sometimes they'll hear it. They'll hear, oh, they said hot dog. Now they want a hot dog. So I've had people whisper, say, can I offer this? Can I offer that? And I'll be like, no, no, no. Or yeah, just one. Or even I have a lady who, she can eat chocolate, but not a lot. So I have to tell people like, okay, if you want to give her chocolate, you can, just not a lot of it.
So essentially the same way with other people's kids.
Right. Like, what are you going to do with these
toddlers? Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I hate to compare them straight to kids, but it's the same thing. You don't go up to somebody's kid and be like, you want chocolate? Like, first of all, you're creepy for a child. And second, again, you don't know. Maybe that person's allergic to, like, I don't know, whatever chocolate's made of. Coconuts. Coconuts aren't in chocolate. But, like, you know what I mean? Like, peanuts. There's so many kids allergic to peanuts. What if you offer them something that has peanuts in it? And then maybe the kid doesn't realize that it's got peanuts. They're like, yeah, I'll take that. And again, kids are the same. They'll say yes to everything.
Right.
No, Kinsley gets her no buttons stuck on, is what I call it. But it's like, do you want this? No. Do you want this? No. Do you want to leave? No. Do you want to go run off a cliff? No. Like, she just, do you want chocolate? No. And it's like, she just says no to everything. And then I'll like go to the extreme. I'm like, do you never want to watch Coco Melon again? No. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Treat it the same as you would. Like, again, if you saw like a parent with a kid having a meltdown in a store, what are you going to do? Go up to the parent and like intervene? No. You're going to take care of it. If you see a kid beating up the parent, maybe try to help.
Right.
You don't intervene. So don't do it. Don't do it in a situation where you see somebody with a disability. And don't like assume like the worst is happening when you see them having like an issue in public. That could just be the way that they are all the time. They could do it at home. They could do it public. I've seen it where, like, we had a lady a long time ago, and sometimes she would just drop to the floor and scream. And there's two of us. There's always had to be two of us with her because she used to do this all the time. She'd drop to the floor and scream. We had to scoop her up by the arms to get her to stand up again. And I remember we were in Walmart once, and somebody walked by, and they said something really weird to us, walking by us, saying something like, we pushed her, she fell, or something. It was very negative. And I was like, she just decided to plop down. This is what she does. This is anywhere she can. You know what I mean? People just assume they know what happened. So we got people walking around Walmart thinking we like pushed a lady. When realistically, she was just having a moment. That's not an issue. She ended up walking around the whole store after. She just needed to do that for a second. It happens. But yeah, don't just like assume that you know what's happening all the time, because you just don't.
Can you explain the difference between Down syndrome and Down syndrome?
I sure can. It's Down syndrome.
So, well enough?
Yeah. Down syndrome. Yeah. So it's two words. So it's Down and then syndrome. So I know a lot of people say Down's syndrome, but technically, like, that's considered, like, with that apostrophe S, it's, like, considered possession, right? Nobody possesses the Down. And it's named after a guy named, like, Langdon Down. And he didn't have Down syndrome. So there's no possession even with that. He just kind of came up with, like, what characterized Down syndrome. Which, like, we all know, there's certain very... common characteristics within Down syndrome. So he came up with those things. So that's why it's called Down syndrome. There are people that will say Down's syndrome, and typically you won't correct it. People will say Down's. That's kind of annoying. And it's a little bit, it's just not the most respectful way to say it. I mean, you should always be referring to a person as the person first in every disability, unless that person says otherwise. If they want to be acknowledged by their disability first and they tell you, totally fine. But as just common knowledge, just they're a person before their disability. They're never gonna, they shouldn't ever be defined as their disability. They're a human being. So you say a person with Down syndrome, you don't say, oh, he's got Downs. Like, it just even it hurts me to say it. Don't refer to people that way. It's just, it's not, it's just not the most respectful way to talk about somebody. And like, I don't typically say an autistic person. I say a person with autism. Is there a person first? Always try to go with that. Again, unless somebody says otherwise. But
your face cringed when you said that.
It's more out of, I don't like saying, it's just more out of respect for the person. Like, I mean, could you imagine if somebody called me like, oh, she's the asthmatic. Like, cool, I've been defined by my asthma today. Great. I'm a human being that has asthma. I don't need to be called an asthmatic, you know? But yeah.
It is a really good way of looking at it.
Now. Yeah. People first, always. They're people, no matter what. They have a disability or not. It's always people first. You're always a human being before anything else. Down syndrome.
Right. And we forewarned you that we were going to ask this because we wanted to formulate your answer, but can we talk about the R word?
Yes. Just real quick. I wrote down a little thing. I tried to simplify it as best that I could so people kind of understand. I've had fights with people about this, and it's never okay to say it. I find it still used today pretty freely, which is really wild because, and it's a little upsetting because there's other words we can't say. And if we do, people are like, don't say that. But I feel like with the R word, it's like we can advocate all we want, but for whatever reason, it's just not an important word that people seem to care about getting rid of. It's weird. I don't really understand it, because even if you use it in the right terms, we're not describing a person. It also means slow. So basically, you're suggesting that something's slow, and you're suggesting that a person is slow. Why is that nice? Like, that's, would you want to be referred to like that? It's just, again, it's disrespectful. So, I mean, using the word is always hurtful for people with disabilities, even if they can't say anything. And it suggests that they're not competent. They don't have the ability to do certain things. And like what you would really want is you want to get rid of the word and you want to encourage like a sense of like pride and high self-esteem for these people and have them from the beginning of basically their life understand that they're special, they're important, they're just as equal as everybody else, even if they have a disability. And in reality, like, okay, they have a disability, but they have so many abilities, and a lot of the abilities that they possess are ones that we don't have. And they're definitely abilities that we should all have. A lot of the kindness is just out of this world. It's something we don't have. We don't even have close to the level of kindness that these people have. They're genuine. They're probably the most, I've supported a lot of people. They're genuine. They're the most genuine, pure human beings. We're not like that. Like, those are the kind of abilities that everybody should possess. And really most of humanity doesn't possess those. You know, they have way better qualities than we do. So you just want to make sure, and you don't want to, like, the R word is to do is it's bad and it's shameful to be that way. And it's not. It's absolutely not. You know, and you don't want them to feel that way. You don't want somebody walking around, like, especially your kid, like, say you have a kid with a disability, you want them walking around feeling like, you know, they're not important and they're bad and what they have is bad and it's embarrassing and, you know, they're just the worst. You want them to be the best and feel like they're the best and, you know, have confidence every day to know that, you know, they're important. And I don't know, I just think it's important that we encourage that, you know, they're equal to the rest of us. They're actually better, but don't tell them that. But they're better than us. They all are. And they should know that for the most part.
Lauren, is there anything else that you want to tell our listeners that we didn't cover?
Not that I can think of off the top of my head. I feel like I just wrote all your questions down and answered them. I had a dream about something and then I woke up and I forgot it. And I remember the dream. I was like, I got to tell them. That's a great topic. I have no... I dream about so many things and they end up being things that I could actually like apply in real life. And I remember like waking up and like, I'm going to write that down, but then I didn't. And then I forgot it. I can't really think of anything else. Like those are the main things that it's like based on, like I could talk about respites and all that for hours and hours and hours because I know more about my respite to base it off of for parents and kids. I can't really think of anything else that they would really want. Like, again, most of this, if there is a parent that has recently discovered their child has a disability or they're thinking maybe they might, it's really just, I would say, a personal, unique journey for that parent. And, you know, the resources are there, but some of the resources may not help, some of them might. It's a personal journey, honestly. And it's a journey of advocacy, really, and learning. So it might be a disability that parent knows nothing about. So a parent's learning about a disability that they've never even heard of. that's a lot. So, you know, it's nice. The mom groups are great because other moms can help. I think mom groups are awesome.
We want to thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciated you coming in and talking to us and teaching us and just giving us a lot of information.
I hope I gave good information.
You did. You did a great job.
Sometimes I feel like I don't give enough information or I didn't know it well enough.
Not a problem here. Not at all.
Hopefully you did great. I helped other parents.
Alrighty, let's do our highs and lows. Do you want to go first or second?
I want to go second because I think mine will sound better tied in after.
Okay, so I will start off with my low because we always, for some reason, start off with our lows.
My kids are really struggling with, it's called object permeance. It's basically when you take away an object and they don't understand that it's coming back. They're really struggling with that right now. Like, I'll go downstairs to our room and they think that I'm like leaving forever, or I go upstairs to the bathroom to like collect towels to do the laundry, which I need to flip tonight. Like, they have a full on meltdown. It's like, well, great. Like, that doesn't really help right now. And I'll be right back. Like, give me 2 seconds. I'll be right back. So that's,
yeah, Ella has that problem all the time.
But I feel like it's gotten worse since Christmas. There are certain people that are popping in and out of my kids' lives at a very sporadic rate. And it's causing, I think it's causing this issue to worsen as opposed to get better. Yeah, I really can't get further into it because I'm in a custody battle, but we'll leave it at that.
Connect the dots, people. Connect the dots.
Yeah. But my high is I have put an application in at 2 different places to live.
Yay!
I mean, it's scary, but it's been almost 2.5 years and I'm ready to GTFO. I'm not looking at like super extravagant places. Like, I'm just looking in the small town near where I'm from, and for safety reasons, I'm not going to say where that is, but because I will be living alone with my children and I feel like that's not cool. I also am starting to feel more confident about being single and just waiting for the right guy to come along. Like, yes, I still have the dating apps, but like, you gotta like, there is like a process to ride this ride at this point. Like, you need to buy me dinner and like, you need to talk to me. And it's like, I want someone who would at least text me every day and be like, have a great day.
Well, and that's just it, right? Like, we all want something different. You just need to figure out what you want. And I think once you get like settled in your own place and everything, like, everything will fall into place. Don't you worry. Like, it honestly happens when you're least expecting it. Shane and I were friends for a while before we started hanging out. So, all right. So I'm going to start with my high because I think it just jumps off of Erica's low, which is actually the complete opposite, which is hilarious. I am talking about selling my house. Not even a house. It's my home. It's been my home. Shane and I lived here twice. Oh, it's been crazy. What a life we've lived so far in this house. But we're talking about moving in with my parents because we can get so much money for our house right now. We might as well just save it and hope that the market crashes and we can just buy a house when it does. But either way, we'll be continuing to look for houses. But yeah, so we might be moving in with my parents and Erica's moving out of her parents' house. So it's kind of hilarious how it's all working out.
I'm also long-term. Like, I've been here 2 years. You guys are doing like the market crash is at this point getting really close because of everything that's going on with the interest rate and everything else.
Right.
So yours is a short-term solution.
I'm hoping my plan is fall, like no later than fall of next year. But I am excited to move to their house. Like, I've been doing a lot of thinking about it and it's like, I could get up early and work out because there's room to do that. It won't wake up Ella because Ella would be 2 stories away. And like, my brain has just been like, I can do this and I can do that. And all the things, and I'm kind of excited about it.
What about your trip for Ella to daycare? Like, to take Ella to and from daycare?
So I would just work from work all the time now. Like, that's, like, it would be farther, like, a lot farther. Instead of 10 minutes, it'd be, like, 25 to 30. But I would just work from work because Ella's daycare is right around the corner from work. So I would give up working from home, which absolutely sucks, but it is what it is. And everything would be in storage anyway. So I don't know if I would bring like my big desktop to my parents. There's talks. My parents have way too much stuff. Their house is very full and they need to downsize. So us going there is going to force them to downsize and get rid of a bunch of stuff. Cause I, as of right now, the talks are our bedroom and bedrooms that are coming. My desk is coming and our couch is coming. So like probably three of the biggest things in this house are going to their house.
Yeah. Remembering what's in your house, the only thing that I would say is bigger is your patio set, which goes outside.
Yeah, which really isn't a big deal. They have lots of outside space that we can put it outside and just cover it up with a tarp, really. We are finding storage right now is impossible because I feel like we're not alone in doing this. So that's been a struggle. I called a couple places. They're all full. So my low is I have just been a mess. So like talking about selling our home and how disorganized I am, because I swear I'm just a disaster right now. The parts of my house that people see when they come over are clean, are organized. Like everything's pretty good in those areas. You go upstairs or downstairs in my house and it's a crapshoot. I am working on trying to be better and be more organized. And now that we're talking about moving, it needs to get organized because we need to be able to sell it and you can't sell it the way it is right now. So I have asked Erica a bunch of questions and we haven't gone over them yet because we decided that we would just make an episode about it. So she can walk. So she's going to walk me through how she stays so organized in our next episode. So stay tuned for that. That will be fun.
And I would also like to note that when I told my childless friend that I was doing this, she's like, ooh, I should listen to that. So this is not going to just be a how to get your life together as a parent. It's going to be like, how does Erica organize her life?
Yeah. And it doesn't, it truly doesn't matter if you have kids. I feel like the kids section like was like a small section of what we, like the questions I had asked were not all kid related. Like very little of it was kid related.
This was more,
I just sent Erica your schedule. What?
This was more like, how do you balance your schedule? And stay
yeah.
sane. And also, I would like to note that this episode outline is already 2 full pages, which most of our outlines are like spilling over onto the second page. This
so it
is
might
like
be a 2-parter.
Full 2 page. Yeah, that's, I'm just saying, this may be a part one, part two thing.
But it will be a fun one. I'm excited. Like, I've already started cleaning like the upstairs, but it will, I think having this conversation and like getting my schedule better and like instead of just like going upstairs and then sitting there and just staring at the pile because it's like, where do I start? Would be lovely. I feel like this is going to be a great episode and I'm excited for it and I need it. I need it in my life. Erica and I are polar opposites when it comes to this. It's funny though, but I have it's funny to say how unorganized I am, but then when it comes to the podcast, I have like a very detailed calendar of our podcast.
I was just going to say when it comes to the podcast, I'm literally like the most disorganized person. And Carla's like, did you post today? Did you do X? Did you, this outline's done. And I'm like, oh my God, I totally forgot to do that. Although I posted today and I'm going to post tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to this episode of our podcast. We appreciate all the support. If you like this episode, please subscribe to the podcast. Jump over to our social media for all the links about all the stuff we talked about. We want to hear from you. Send us a DM or an email. See you on the first.